MGO Radio 6.4 live from social distancing. Seth, I have a metaphor.
Uh-huh. For everything?
Well, not like everything. I'm not like the computer in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay, so for Michigan hockey's dominance, then.
No, it wasn't about that. It was about, so we're starting a little late because I came up with like a full French press of tea and went full infomercial on it. I put it on the ground. There's just like bits of tea on the rug that I don't have time to do anything with. The children are going to come in at some point and probably eat it, which is fine.
Yeah, they see a puddle. They're like, you know, they don't care what liquid it is. They're just going to play with it.
It's not really a puddle because it's soaking into the rug and sort of staining it. I mean, it's not like a Big Lebowski rug here. It's not a precious object, but yeah, I just felt like, oh, that's what the Wisconsin game must have felt like.
You just can't deal with it right now. This is broken, and it's spilled.
It's broken,
and it's all over
the
place.
I need to do. Let's just move on. It's gross over there. I don't really like it. It's kind of bothering me, but I'm not going to pay attention to it because that's the best way to approach the situation.
There's time to clean it up later.
Right?
Yeah, no. There's plenty of time to clean it up later, and you know you'll get it right eventually. It's a good carpet. You have a good carpet underneath it. I'm out of the metaphor.
Children do it. I don't know. Maybe not. So usually our first segment here after a football game is to discuss what we learned about
the
football
game. Well, if you would like to delay that a little longer, I could talk about our sponsors.
Sure, we could do that.
Okay. Do you want me to do it slowly?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
Well, MGO Radio was brought to you by Underground Printing and the Bose Store. You can check out Underground Printing for a custom holiday swag for your business at ugp.io/holiday-gift-guide. Link is in the description. Associate sponsors are Ann Arbor Elder Law, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Information Entropy, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, and the University of Michigan Alumni Association.
So the problem about talking about a game like Wisconsin is that, I mean, it's not interesting.
Like, here's my deep analysis, sir.
I mean, you lose a game like 24-27 or something, and you're like, well, what are the things that went wrong? What could have gone differently that would have caused us to win this game? You know, 49-11 is just like, well, that sucked, and everybody already knows that. So,
yeah, it's like after you have an engine fire, and like, you know, you take it in and ask the guy to look under the hood and goes, well, there's your problem, sir. Your engine was on fire. They don't really need us for that.
That almost happened to my wife, actually. She had her car just started like smoking and like catching on fire a little bit, so she took it in, and it turns out that the squirrels in our yard had been putting pine cones into her engine to, like, I don't know if they were storing them or if they, like, she had somehow offended them. She doesn't seem like the kind of person who would get squirrels to, like, organize a rebellion against her, so probably the former. Anyway, the Wisconsin game.
I mean, I have a story about my crappy old car.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Go. Come on.
Yeah, you know, everyone's got their first car that you just, like, you drive it until it runs into the ground. And for me, I drove it until the oil all leaked out and it was, like, taped up on the bottom with like a little clip in order to make sure the oil wouldn't come out, and then the coolant leaked out, and so I was like pouring water on the engine to keep it just cool enough to get like the next mile until I could get to somewhere where I could like refill it with coolant. And when I got home from that trip, that was when my parents were like, it's time that you get yourself a new car.
My first car was a 1995 Dodge Shadow, and if you got up to 85 miles an hour on the freeway, it started rattling so hard you thought the car was going to disintegrate and you'd just be like, like the Wile E. Coyote cartoons where he's just got a steering wheel and he continues going.
That was a regular thing back then. My grandpa's Cadillac was like that. So like if you got it past 80,
a Cadillac shouldn't do that.
It was, well, this thing was like a boat, but I used to drive down to Florida with him every once a year, right? And then I'd fly back home after coming down to Florida for a bit, and this thing would rattle at like 78 miles an hour, and it would wake him up, and then he'd be like, slow down. But if I could get past the rattle, then I could just like cruise for like, you know, 85 all the way down to Florida.
All right,
that's it. I'm out of car stories.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
I'm driving with my wife. My wife is pregnant. And then suddenly the car is out of gas and it's her fault. And she's like, oh my God, it's her fault. But I can't make her get out and push while she drives because she's my pregnant wife. So this is just on Packer. Like, so we're close enough to a gas station where I'm like, all right, I guess we're going to try to push it to a gas station. So I start pushing and, you know, you're, it's going, it's getting there. Some guy who's walking by, like, jumps in and starts helping me push. But then there's, like, the hill up mm-hmm. to the actual gas station. You're like, this is never going to work. And so this guy is pushing and I'm pushing. And we're just out of, we don't have enough motive force. And some guy stopped at the light, gets out of his car, and is like, pulls off the Clark Kent costume and he's got the S underneath and he's just pushing. We get it up there and I'm like, thank you guys so much. And then the guy had to run back to his car so that he could get in it because the light had changed.
Well,
and that's my story about running out of gas on Packard. Now we should talk about Wisconsin.
Oh, I thought that was like a metaphor for like a cornerback recruit or something, and then we could talk about recruiting. But no, Wisconsin, go ahead.
It was bad.
There's your problem, sir. Right there. You see the everything? There's your problem right there.
I mean, it's not even wrong. It was everything. Like, you have your defensive ends are out, so that's like understandable. But you're getting ground up on the ground. And the jet sweeps, they ran like eight of, and Michigan didn't defend it once. I know David Pollack posted a tweet where he's just looking at this play, and he looked at it from the back view, and he noticed that the entire left side of the line had a counter step. That's pretty nasty, but you'd think the eighth time you saw it, you might do a little bit better with it.
Yeah. So, I mean...
The contrast between those jet sweeps and the one time Michigan tried a jet sweep with A.J. Henning, where Wisconsin has a cover two cornerback, and that guy's 3 yards in the backfield, cutting out the legs of Eric All, just night and day. And one of these teams is very well coached. You're watching Wisconsin play defense. It's extremely impressive. Obviously, their offense has some limitations because they don't recruit as well as you have to. But I think given what they have, they do as well as they can. And on the other hand, Michigan, like even the guys who had some sort of established level of performance are mostly disappointing. I think Josh Ross really leapt out. He was some like -7, -8. And the mistakes he was making were like, I'm going to fly and I'm going to go upfield of a block and I'm not going to funnel back to coverage. I mean, funnel back to help, which is like Jonas Mouton stuff. Like the dying days of the Rich Rod regime is the last time the linebackers have been so consistently failing to execute things that are linebacker one-on-one.
Yeah.
And those are the guys who you expect to be on top of things.
I mean, I have my theory on it, and that's that, you know, they don't trust their defensive tackles. And they don't trust the defensive ends now because their guys are gone. And he thinks he's got to be Superman. So he's like, well, if I don't step down, they're going to get a fullback. They're just going to get cracked. And I'm going to be outside, and I'm not going to be able to help. So anytime he sees that counter step, he just, you know, goes crazy.
I think there's some truth to that. Like the first play where he doesn't set an edge. Well, he's worried that if he sets the edge that there's going to be a gap inside of him. The problem with that is that there is going to be a gap inside of him, but Cam McGrone is in much better position to deal with that. Because John Dewar posted just a couple clips this week, and I saw a couple people replying about how McGrone wasn't showing any effort. And I'm like, that's not his job to be tackling guys outside the hash marks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if he's tackling a guy outside the hash marks, something has gone badly wrong. And something had gone badly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I leave it to there's a lot of old guys chirping about effort, and I leave it to them to, like, spot that kind of thing because that's not anything that I can tell on video, but I can tell when a guy is not doing his job because I know the structure of this defense. And, like, that's the difference. Still, like, in Gerg's time, we didn't know what the hell they were doing because, like, we couldn't tell. We'd never seen it work.
And you're seeing stuff like there's a pass in the flat where Jamon Green is apparently running man coverage and nobody else is.
Mm-hmm.
You see Michigan run zone against mesh, and I'm not exactly sure whose fault it was, but you see Green pass off a guy who's running a mesh route, and like he's not immediately thinking, well, what if there's a guy coming the other way, like every other third down we've ever faced? So just holes in the zone, guys trying to make up for the failings of their teammates after the defensive ends go out, not a lot of talent. And then on offense, Joe Milton had his worst game. He got pulled, obviously, deservedly. There's not really much you can say about his performance that isn't obvious. don't throw it to the opposition. I mean, they tried to run.
This is what they need us for.
Run them some, but combination of blocking issues and I mean, I've been advocating for them to run with Joe Milton, and they tried it, and even with that extra margin of error, they couldn't get any yards. So,
I mean, look how they're below levels of expectations that we thought could be the floor for this team. And part of the reason is the offensive line. We thought, you know, Ed Warner, these guys, you know, they're highly recruited. They've been in the program a long time, and they'll have plenty of options. And, you know, Zach Zinner playing is a good sign for Zach Zinner down the road, but it's certainly not a good sign for everybody who's beneath him. And,
yeah,
you know, Andrew Stuber kicking out to offensive tackle, you know, he's a guy coming back from injury. He doesn't seem to have that step even as much as he had. And he wasn't a great athletic tackle before. He's a, you know, he's a big dude. And the move inside was supposed to be great for him. So you have him outside, which is not his best position. And my question is, where are the other guys? Where's Trenty Jones they talked about? You know, where's Keegan, Trevor Keegan? Like, he was, you know, getting a lot of buzz. Like, where are the guys that they were planning on playing before you get to this level? Because this level has a very low ceiling, and we're already at the floor.
Not entirely sure if I parsed that last sentence correctly. yeah, I mean, we'll see. I guess they're probably going to start rotating guys in because that's what teams at this level do. Because this couldn't be worse factor kind of amps up. But I think we've done our duty here in talking about Wisconsin football. Let's take a break, come back, and talk about anything else.
Great idea.
It's November, and that means the holiday season is right around the corner. If you're looking for a unique gift, our friend of the pod, Underground Printing, is here for you. We love UGP because they provide top-quality custom tees and hoodies at affordable prices. Plus, their expert staff makes the design process simple. Check out UGP's holiday gift guide at ugp.io/holidaygiftguide and use the promo code GOBBLE27 for 27% off your next purchase. That's GOBBLE27, like a turkey.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 6.4 live from social distancing. Now that we have discharged our duty to talk about the Wisconsin football game, we can move on to things that are less infinitely depressing. To do that, we welcome in Dave Nasternak. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. I'm here to talk about Wisconsin, but not
other Wisconsin. Don't do that.
Just wanted to see if I can give Brian a flashback.
So as we speak, we're at the midway point in Michigan's second series of the year. Thursday night victory 5-2 with an empty netter. Michigan slightly outshoots, and I believe Corsi was it tied or was it slight advantage of Michigan?
No, I think they had the advantage 58-45, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So a pretty sizable Corsi victory. Two power play goals for Michigan, one for Wisconsin. And that Wisconsin team looks completely different than last year's Wisconsin team, which was porous at goalie, porous on defense, made a lot of things, just let a lot of goals. And Michigan was actually stymied for most of the first half of this game. And then Pasuyov is able to slam it in on, I think, his second attempt.
Another ridiculous pass from Bortolo, who I thought had a great night.
Oh, yes. Thomas Bortolo had another primary assist in this game, just continues to drive play. And one thing that I think we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of seeing eye passes. So you have Jimmy Lambert, of all people, getting up off the deck, finding Beecher in the slot alone for a top shelf goal on the power play. And, you know, Lambert, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, prime red teams always had a couple of guys who kind of idled around the third line most of their careers, come through as upperclassmen and really improve. It looks like Lambert's the lead dog in that race this year.
So we mentioned this on the hockey cast in the preview one, that Red called him out on his press conference before the year started, saying that he was one of the top four guys that were really going to take a jump this year. And a lot of times, like, you think, okay, great. You know,
did you mean Red or did you read Mel?
I mean Mel.
Okay.
They both have three letters in their names. I just say, like, your name's Bob, right? So,
thereabouts.
And, Ryan. Yeah. Ryan.
Brain.
Ryan
called Brain.
Yes. Yes, I have.
So Lambert's like up there, and you're like, all right, great. You know, I've heard this before. And then he's on the first line, so you're like, okay, he's with Beecher, and all right. And then he comes out jumping in that first series against Arizona State, and you're like, okay, so he actually can play. And then last night, Alex Drain was sitting there with me, and he's like, there is no way he saw Beecher with that pass. There is just no, I mean, just from a physical standpoint, there's no way you could see him. But it was a great play, and he's been good, like legitimately maybe top line good so far this year.
The other thing that jumped out to me about that particular goal is the reason that Beecher was so wide open in the slot. So you've got two guys in the corner for Wisconsin who are chasing Kent Johnson, and then you have Lambert behind the goal line, and then Owen Power is driving the net, and he takes a defenseman with him, and that's why
Beecher
has that wide open
right.
Power's a scary dude when he's coming down towards the net too.
Like, well, it's just Michigan kind of reminds me of those old Jordan Leopold teams from Minnesota, where their defense are just so active that they fly up into the zone, and Michigan has to rotate back. Super aggressive, and it's something that is going to lead to some odd man rushes the other way. But when you have Strauss Mann, that's a risk you can take, and it just makes your in-zone chance generation so much better.
And Alex said this too, where he's like, you know, you might give up a few chances when you play that way with, like, you're talking about activated defensemen, but with this team, you also might generate 25 chances for yourself. So am I going to give up five to take 25 or whatever with this team? I mean, absolutely. Like, they had five goals in a game where they didn't score for the first half and looked kind of disjointed, trying to come out of their zone. I mean, the skill took over in the end. I didn't think they played well. They played good enough, and against a, like you said, much improved Wisconsin team who does have guys that can skate with Michigan. So it's not like that it's just a bunch of tryhards. They do have some talent on that team. And then they really cleaned up a lot of defensive issues because, I mean, the last couple of years, they would just hemorrhage goals from the back end, and it would just be like pucks are coming out everywhere, and the goalie's stuck with a 2-on-0 and things like that. And Michigan used to just pile up stuff. And I don't know that they really had anything like that yesterday that I remember seeing at all. And
there's their goalie, one breakaway that man stoned.
No, I meant the other way. Oh. Like Wisconsin used to give that stuff away.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
The last couple of years, and they didn't at all. And now they have a goalie that, you know, has seen a puck before. They knows how to stop. So, I mean, those were always the issues with this Wisconsin team. They look like they could be probably not as good as Michigan because Michigan has that high-end talent. But they look like they could finish in the top half to third of the Big Ten.
Yeah, and there was another result yesterday that helps us think that the opening weekend wasn't just a Minnesota football game. is that Arizona State tied Michigan State 1-1. So,
did you watch any of that?
No, I didn't have the opportunity. But Michigan State probably not going to finish very high up in the Big Ten, but they're at least respectable. I think they were third or fourth last year.
Michigan State?
Yeah, Michigan State.
Oh, they must have shot up at the end.
They did. Well, I mean,
it was all so tight.
Last year's Big Ten was like
everybody
3 points separating one from seven.
Yeah.
But so that's likely to be a win that stands up as a win over a reasonable team, unlike Minnesota. So that's another positive.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I watched a decent amount of it before the Michigan game started, and like Michigan State created chances, but it wasn't like they were getting into the house in the slot like crazy the way Michigan was the previous weekend. And I mean, they only finished one goal, so I don't think they have like a lot of high-end finishing. It's just, okay, we're going to be solid at the back end, and if we can get some things to go our way and pucks bounce our way, you know, we can get a few goals. I mean, that's basically what Michigan's been the last couple of years. So, no, I think that I would say that Michigan State maybe a step above Arizona State, but nothing that's overly significant.
Right. So Michigan's going to play in about 90 minutes here to hopefully get another sweep, start the season 4-0. Are you looking for anything in particular tonight?
Yeah. Do you know who's starting tonight?
Oh, Portillo?
Eric Portillo. I mean, he is on the line chart. So, I mean, they could flip it, but he's listed had a man on the line chart.
I mean, you got to use that guy. You got him. You have to use him, even though... whatever.
Yeah, I might have put him out there the second game against Arizona State to like ease him in.
Wisconsin. Or the other one Alex and I were talking is that maybe against Notre Dame, because Notre Dame is because the style play here, right, is like Michigan's going to abandon you from time to time, and you're going to be on your own. And you know, Notre Dame probably doesn't have the attack that, you know, you look at some of the players at Wisconsin, and I don't know if Pelton Bice is going to play after that hit, but, you know, you obviously still have Caulfield. You know,
We should probably talk about a couple of those hits that dished out, because that's Brendan Briston just tapping a guy, but in the exact wrong spot on the ice, easily could have been five.
Yeah, there's a lot of different opinions on it where, you know, that's a super dirty play, or it was he just lost an edge play, or it was he was going after him. You know, I mean, there's things, I don't know. It seemed like it was on the fringe of a number of those things, but he definitely could have gotten five, and he could have gotten a game misconduct too.
I think his immediate reaction after it happened, where he's just like, ah, probably, like he puts his stick up and he's like, eek. I feel like that helped because he knew that he had done something inadvisable. Well,
and then Moyle did not the same thing, but almost the same thing later on, where he had a guy in a really congested area in the neutral zone, like right between the benches. Like, is there really a point even if you win that puck? Like, teams are changing anyway. It's not like you're going anywhere. Like, I don't know. It just seemed like a huge chance to take in that situation.
Well, and there were a couple of weird calls. Like, Michigan was about to score, had a puck in the crease, and their guy gets cross-checked, and that didn't get called. And then, like, Wisconsin, after the Brisson hit, Michigan gets a roughing call on Wisconsin just because it looked like a guy was finishing his check. So there really didn't seem to be a whole lot of consistency with the officiating.
I mean, they didn't call anything for the first half of the game, almost. Or more than half.
I wonder if teams are going to be... I mean, if referees are going to be more circumspect about giving Michigan power plays.
Somebody on Twitter was, like, complaining about the call on, I think it was Lambert early on, for a hook.
Yeah.
But he's kind of, like, hacking and slashing a guy who's, like, driving the net. So, like, that's a little bit like, okay, I can see that point. But the other thing is, like, Michigan's speed and skill is going to be just at such a premium that you're going to get calls because guys are going to take you down because you're just by them. I mean, it's like, you know, you see guys that get grabbed in football. Well, we've watched it enough, right? Where a guy goes running right by him and you have to pull on him because he's so far by you. That's going to happen in hockey too. And Michigan's going to be on the positive end of some of those. I mean, assuming that they're going to be blatantly obvious, but you know, either that or they're going to just smoke some guys.
Yeah. We should talk about that power play. So one of the power play markers is Bortolo finding Brisson for a Kyle Connor-esque one-timer almost from the goal line.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we saw him do that a lot in the USHL. A lot of his highlights are setting up shop on the left slot, the right slot, and just hammering that one-timer. And we saw it in the Arizona State game on game two where he had probably six shots in a 30-second period, didn't score any of them. But I think that's going to be a very profitable route. Reminds me of TJ Hensick and Andy Hilbert, guys who really had that connection going, especially on the power play.
Yeah, I mean, Bortolo on the power play is just so great because, like, the thing about him is if you give him time and space, like, he's like Steve Nash in that sense of where he's just going to find you and put the puck on your stick. And, I mean, actually, that's pretty true of a lot of guys on this team when they have space. Like, we've seen Beniers do that again. I mean, he recreated basically the Sunday goal with Cicchellini and did it last night again, and it was almost from pretty much the same spot on the ice. And so you just have guys that when you have time and space, like you do on the power play, when you can move the puck like that, you know, if you have finishers like you were talking about with Brisson, as they said last night.
Brisson. Then,
they were saying it like then, it ends like Brisson.
Brisson.
Brisson. Brisson. If you want to do it in French, it's Brisson.
Where's Brisson. MG? We got to get MG. He's got to have the official pronunciation. So, but when you have guys like that can finish, which Michigan also has on this team, I mean, this power play, I feel like their power play two line is, I mean, it could probably be a lot of teams' power play ones. So,
yep.
I mean, you just can't give them penalties, and especially enough. Because, like, last year, remember, Michigan got to the point where they were drawing penalties, and you're like, all right, we have chances. But they just couldn't really create a whole lot. And this year, man, like, holy cow.
They had the Kent world. Johnson, I'm sorry to interrupt there, the Kent Johnson pass where he, like, you know, it's a standard play against the boards, and all of a sudden he just, you know, spinoramas with the puck, and he's in the middle. I think that was the moment when Wisconsin was like, yeah, we can't skate with these guys. And
well, I mean, they have Caulfield, not Brock, the older one, who's a first-round pick, high-end talent. And they were missing Dylan Holloway, who I can't believe Wisconsin let him go to the World Junior camp that Canada's having, because Michigan was like, you can have Owen Power on December 11th when our first half of our schedule is over, and I'm like, yes!
Yep. Well, I mean, you were talking about Caulfield and stuff. I mean, that was a great goal that they had, him and Weisbach had, of like up top where they switched positions and basically spun Beecher in a circle. And Caulfield had the pass. Like, you know, he's usually the guy that gets the goal, but he came up along the side and switched and got into the center and spun Beecher, and then he had the pass to Weisbach. And, you know, that went in, and I wasn't even mad because I'm like, that's a really good play. I mean, like, the design of that and the execution and – and maybe it was Alex that said, you know, man, if Caulfield could learn to pass like that, like, he becomes a different kind of player.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this Wisconsin team is going to be vastly improved this year from watching them play, which is a credit to Granato because they had a long way to go last year. They were very, very young. And the offseason, I think, has benefited them more than most, which is what you would expect from a team with a lot of talent but a lot of youth.
So are you impressed with Granato's flow? I feel like you of all people would enjoy that.
The play-by-play guy also had like the like hockey mullet going on. It was a very Wisconsin.
people on Twitter are complaining about it, like, oh yeah, we get the Wisconsin bias, and I'm just like, do you know how this works? Like, they're doing is streaming the local Wisconsin feed. Like, so
I didn't think it was that bad.
When they go to Minnesota.
For one, the commercials were not all for Olympia Entertainment things, so we didn't get to see Zach Brown Band. That was weird. And also, the lottery, there's like a lot of commercials that are polka themed. It was unbelievable. I was like, I feel like a cheese curd is growing out of my nose. This is so Wisconsin.
Do you polka?
I don't polka.
Have
Do
you
I
ever?
Look like I polka?
You have a lot of hair.
You polka?
I polka you. No, but
that's.
So I have Minnesota and Penn State on now because they're playing in the middle of the afternoon for whatever reason. And, you know, Minnesota is the team that's picked to finish ahead of Michigan. And Penn State is doing the Penn State thing that they always do where they come down the ice and shoot and then they shoot more and they keep shooting. But they're not getting the chances that they were the past couple of years, and they're still leaving their goalie exposed. So Penn State looks like they could maybe take a step back, and Minnesota looks good, okay, but probably a TBD. And we see Penn State in a couple weeks in State College, so and then Minnesota right afterwards.
All right. Should be fun.
Yep.
Talk more about it because God knows there's something else to talk about. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to take a break, come back, talk some basketball.
All right, see you guys.
Yep. All right, see ya.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
It's November, and that means the holiday season is right around the corner. If you're looking for a unique gift, our friend of the pod, Underground Printing, is here for you. We love UGP because they provide top-quality custom tees and hoodies at affordable prices. Plus, their expert staff makes the design process simple. Check out UGP's holiday gift guide at ugp.io/holiday-gift-guide and use the promo code GOBBLE27 for 27% off your next purchase. That's GOBBLE27, like a turkey.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Welcome back to Emigo Radio 6.4 live from social distancing. We continue to talk about things other than football. Welcome in Ace and Benner. We're going to talk about the Wings as part of our kind of elongated basketball preview podcast series. And we'll collate them all into one podcast so people will not be tempted to not have a feeling about football.
Yeah. That's a great advertisement for this podcast.
If you enough about Franz.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, we kind of talked enough about Franz as a two guard, but spiritually he's more of a three or even a four, depending on how burly he is. And Michigan is going to be very large for big chunks of the year.
He might be 6'10 now. That's what they're saying. So, I mean, he's probably the second or third ball handler on this team, but he's also going to be able to guard a lot of positions on defense. So he's in the Wings preview on the preview I'm writing up right now. But he's also a kind of guardish, and positions don't matter on this team unless you're a point guard or a center. Let's kind of roll with that. And even the center part can get a little, there's some room for interpretation.
I have an interesting roster note is that there's only one center listed on the roster, which is Hunter Dickinson. Austin Davis gets the F. That's no.
Juwan Howard goes by NBA standards.
That is a center.
Which is,
that is no,
if we
NBA
must
center,
list you as a center.
The dinosaur.
That's it. That's true. But yeah, I guess there's some sort of 7-foot barrier that you need to surpass to be listed as a center on Michigan's roster. We won't cover everybody who's listed as a forward or a guard.
But the two guys likely starting next to Wagner, we think, are going to be Isaiah Livers and Chandi Brown. And Livers is a guy who I think everybody who's a Michigan fan is well acquainted with. Where do you think he can take his game as a senior?
I think he can add... I think he can just tighten up a few things. Like we saw, you know, he was a little uncertain off the dribble last year. Sometimes his shot selection wasn't ideal in terms of he definitely got a better feel for when to pull up for long distance shots. But there were honestly times where I would like to see him shoot more when he was out there. Other than that, you just kind of hope for just a full healthy season out of him after he was kind of in and out of the lineup last year, and that really had a significant impact on Michigan's season. You know, maybe improving a little bit of his agility on defense. It's hard to project how much players are going to be able to take their games to the next level after this weird off season. So I don't know how to kind of look at like the normal college basketball development curve, which is often pretty rapid, and then look at it with these guys were probably locked away for when a lot of that would happen. But Livers is going to be at the very least a hell of a shooter, so they know they've got that.
Yeah, and he's also one of the better wing defenders in the league, has been for a couple years now, and that was one of the major reasons that Michigan fell off so hard when they didn't have him around. That Wisconsin game particularly stood out as a time when Livers being available would have made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, just to have his versatility in there on the roster, I'm going to say like versatility and position versatility way too much during this podcast, probably because of just the fact that all of these guys can play multiple positions. And given it's really nice to be able to switch 1 through 4 or even 1 through 5, depending on your center on defense, Michigan's going to be able to do that. And that can cover for some individual defensive shortcomings in a way that only things like maybe having a 7'2" center also kind of covers for those shortcomings.
Yeah, my one concern with Livers this year is not having X around might eat into his ability to get shots off, because he's a guy who, you know, when he does dribble towards the basket, it's usually 1 or 2 dribbles and then a pull-up, not the most efficient shot in basketball. So getting him open looks from three is something that I think is going to have to be a priority, maybe even like in the Purdue fashion, where you're trying to get him moving off the ball like Duncan Robinson in the NBA, so that the playmaking isn't necessarily coming from a point guard getting into the paint, but from a series of screens that gets you open for a window to shoot.
Well, and they already have some of that built into the offense, more actually for guys who are setting the screens, which could work quite well for Livers because he is a viable screen and roll guy at 6'7", 230, with at least a little bit of athletic pop. He's not exactly a dude who's dunking all over people, but you have to respect his ability to roll at the rim. But that double drag screen is something that Michigan was running. They'd use Eli Brooks as a screener in that last year and have him slip the screen and pop out to three while the other screener rolled to the rim. So they have certain plays in the offense already, and I think we're going to see more kind of set offense from Juwan Howard this year, because without Simpson out there running the point where you kind of need to base your offense around running the high screen and roll as your base play most every possession. Michigan's now, they're going to be able to put out 4 or 5 guys who can shoot. Your point guard is not going to be someone that teams can sink off of into the paint, and therefore there are going to be some more options in terms of who else you let run the offense. Obviously, we've talked about Wagner doing that a fair amount, and I think you're going to see a much more egalitarian offense and a more varied offense because you're not running everything through the point guard this time around.
And then the second starter on the wing, Chandi Brown, Wake Forest transfer, a guy who was fairly high usage for a bad team, had decent efficiency, not a standout three-point shooter, but hit 30-some percent last year, so not a guy you can totally leave. Good offensive rebounder, good defender, good cut guy, good finisher at the rim. He's kind of an all-around B player, and it's a useful thing. I don't know how much play he's actually going to drive. He's going to absorb shots more than create them.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of his, like when you watch his Wake Forest tape, even for a guy who took up a lot of possessions, a lot of his stuff is just straight line drives off the catch. And he's really good at that. And that's something that Michigan can, you know, if they've got a couple creators, that's something that'll be very useful on a team that doesn't necessarily have a lot of attacking the basket power outside of Franz. But I was really impressed. I went on HoopLens and looked up the on-off numbers for Chaundy Brown last year because actually for some reason Synergy is just like missing his page. So I couldn't pull Synergy data on him yet. But his on-off stats were really impressive. Wake Forest last year fell off 6 percentage points from 2-point on offense when Brown was off the floor. They scored a point per possession when he was out there and only 0.93 when he was out, and that was actually shooting better from three when he was off the court. So he was a really important piece of that offense. They were also a full 5 percentage points from two better on defense with him on the floor. So this is somebody who fits in well from a team perspective, even when the team isn't very good, and he's going to be able to use his body to and pretty solid athleticism to generate a decent number of kind of late clock, garbagey, you know, outside the flow of play sort of points. And I actually think there's also a fair amount of unexplored upside with his shot. He's always been a very above average free throw shooter. A couple of people have asked why I keep bringing up free throw shooting when talking about three-point shooting. There is a very direct correlation between those two. Just wanted to mention that since I had seen that mentioned on the blog a couple times. But he's like an 84% free throw shooter. So, and a lot of what he had to do at Wake last year was pretty contested late clock stuff. So there should be more opportunity for him to, you know, maybe set his feet, shoot some open looks, and maybe bring that up more into the 35% range, maybe even better. Don't want to ask for too much, but he's also just, you know, like we talked about Livers coming back and how important that is for the lineup. We talked about how Franz Wagner is, you know, maybe taller than, like, we can't even really call him a guard because he's 6'10". Brown's 6'5", but he might be the most power forward, like, of any of those guys. So he's going to be a really tough, this is just going to be a very difficult team for other teams to match up against when they put, whether it's starting him or I could see a scenario where Michigan starts both Eli Brooks and Mike Smith and then brings Brown off the bench and still plays him like 35 minutes a game. But it's just going to be a really tough team to match up against because they're enormous and there's not going to be a lot of leaving anybody.
Backups at these spots, their playing time could be minimal. It could be 15 minutes a game. I think it depends more on what Zeb Jackson does, what Mike Smith does, than anything else. Like, is Wagner available too? There's a lot of questions here. There's probably going to be one meaningful contributor outside of Wagner, Livers, and Chaundy Brown at that kind of 3-4 spot. And a primary option is probably going to be Brandon Johns, although we're going to discuss him more as a center.
Yeah, but, because he's definitely going to play some of that this year, and there are a lot of wings.
Yeah, so Brandon Johns, probably your first option if you need some minutes at the four. But there are two other guys on the roster, both freshmen, Jace Howard, 6'7", 210, obviously Juwan Howard's son. The lowest ranked guy in this class, probably a guy who's going to develop, maybe even redshirt this year. Doesn't seem like we've heard a lot of talk about him just yet as a potential early contributor. That's mostly centered around Zeb Jackson.
Yeah, like Phil Martelli gave a really in-depth press conference a couple of days ago that has helped to form a lot of my season preview content. And when it got to Jace Howard, he started off by talking about how he's a good teammate and that he's verbal and he's trying to grow into a position. So because he's mentioned, and this is a legitimate point for a lot of guys in Howard's who are Howard sizes, that he used to play more of a pure forward because when you're 6'5 as a high schooler, that's quite reasonable. And now they're converting him into more of a guard/wing. So, This is a guy who could emerge as a probably more of a rotation player as an upperclassman, but expecting much out of him now is probably, unless weird things happen, pretty unreasonable.
Yeah, the other guy is Terrence Williams, too, who's 6'7", but he's 240, so much closer to playing weight. And the guy who I kind of compare him to is Brandon Dawson, although he's not nearly as bouncy as Dawson, but he's that kind of junkyard dog four who's going to be able to get you a bunch of offensive rebounds. He's a decent shooter from outside, which Brandon Dawson was not. I guess Jayshon Tate is another kind of guy in this genre of slightly undersized but thick fours who can really go get rebounds and be a dogged defender.
How long would it be really interesting to see how Michigan uses him, because he could even be a little bit of a three. I mean, because he's got enough outside shooting to do that. He's 6'7", it's not weird, as long as he can kind of stay in front of guys defensively, and then he can use his strength to still be a potential multi-positional guy. And honestly, if Michigan didn't have Brandon Johns and Isaiah Livers in front of him, we might even be talking about him as a, you know, against certain teams, a pretty unusual small ball center, because he plays with that kind of hair on fire style. But I mean, the teams do some weird things these days. But Michigan has recruited enough like actual potential centers or real like taller power forwards who are bouncy that they don't need to do that. But I really like Williams' game. It seems like Bartelli does too. He called him an old soul in a young man's body. It's not like we're getting some great early Martelli stuff this year. Also, yeah, it was his anniversary, I think, today, and he posted a picture from that, and the dude, he got some quality 70s swag going back in the day. love Phil Martelli. But yeah, Williams, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets anywhere between 10 or 15 minutes a game as somebody who plugs in mostly at the four and brings a lot of energy to the team and doesn't change the offense too much, because, you know, you can rely on him to shoot, and also you can rely on him to play hard on defense, which is half the battle.
Yeah, when's the last time we had a guy like that? I can't think of the last time Michigan had a junkyard dog, you know, down at the four or any. I mean, not including Jordan Morgan.
I guess GR3, I think, would probably be the closest thing.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty decent comparison between them, even though they have different body types. But there's some similarities between the two. Otherwise, yeah. A junkyard dog was not really a 1-4 position in B-line's system. Except for the point guard?
The point guard. So I think we feel pretty good about the 3 and 4 here. We've got two or three established high-level Big Ten players, depending on where Wagner is. Got a couple of guys for depth. Should be at least solid, a little bit more able to deal with an injury or two this year than they were last year.
Yeah, and that's going to be really important, because this is an extremely condensed schedule. They're playing 25 games in 102 days, and there's an 11-day layoff in there somewhere. So think about how much that smashes all the other games together. And you start to realize that, like, even the best conditioned teams are going to need to manage minutes pretty closely, and Michigan might be able to do that, should be able to do that very naturally, just because, we've been talking about this ever since the Chandi Brown transfer was announced. It's hard to fill out a projected lineup for this team without feeling like you are squeezing somebody out of minutes they deserve, because they're really loaded at certain positions, and it's like either an experienced guy is going to get squeezed out somewhere, or a freshman isn't going to get the minutes that they expect, or someone's going to have a very different role than what they had last year, because there's just a lot of talent on this team and a lot of depth, and Juwan Howard's going to have a lot of fun matching up with teams with these guys.
All right, well, we're going to take one more break, come back, and talk about Rutgers.
Want to stick around, Ace?
Nope.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
All right, where are y'all from? Detroit? All right, you know this one.
Moonlight City, you treat me like a drug. You just break me, love and roll me out. When will you be rid of me? Slowly driving you insane.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 6.4 Live from Social Distancing. Now is the time on Sprockets when we talk Rutgers.
Aha. Except for we can't just say it's Rutgers this year because we're Rutgers.
You should shout out the band, too.
Yeah, that band is Bump, from a Detroit-based band that was mostly in operation around 2007, 2008. That song was called Motorland. The other songs were Last Chance and Keep It Close. So pretty on theme today.
All right, so Rutgers has a win against Michigan State. They kept the Indiana game slightly closer than we did, at least in terms of the scoreboard. And they only lost to Ohio State by a score of 49-27, which I would take right now.
Well, I think I already used my hot take, which was I'm kind of glad that Rutgers used up all of their trick plays against Ohio State. Like, they had the throwback punt return, and they had some quarterback toss or two quarterback plays and stuff, and they used a bunch of them against Indiana too, so they took their shot. I don't think they were saving them for Michigan this year.
Well, if there's anything left in the box, it's coming out. As you know, Greg Schiano is like, this is not hurdle that we cannot get over. Let's get it all out there.
Yeah, well, he already has a win against Michigan, remember?
Yes, I do. Thank you for that.
So we're there again. and I signed his quarterback, which I probably should not have done. you know, it's fair. Noah Vedral is not a good quarterback, but that's just, like, asking for it, isn't it?
It is. But, so, the Rutgers offense is pretty much the traditional Rutgers offense. Vedral is averaging 8.1 yards a completion. Everybody other than Bo Melton, who is averaging 17 yards a catch, pretty good, is averaging, like, 6. Like, their number two wide receiver has 21 catches, and he has, like, 120 yards. He's averaging 6 yards a catch, which is what Pacheco is averaging. So, for the nth consecutive year, this is a team that's terrified of its pass protection and doesn't really have a quarterback and is just trying to survive with their passing game. The problem is that fades are quick passes because they're in the air so long.
But
and you know, Vincent Gray and Jamon Green have been a lot better about sticking close to those. And if we pick up a couple of penalties like we do in every game, I don't think that's going to be the end of the world. But Melton is a guy who can get deep on guys, and that is kind of a doesn't sound good.
And, you know, one of these guys we can double. Here's the part thing about the reason why their passing is so terrible is they're only putting 3 guys out in a route. They leave the running back in, or at least like release him late after the seat if anyone's come, and the tight ends are staying to the point where they're covering tight ends all the time. That I was blown away. They had 3 fourth down attempts against Indiana. And they covered the tight end, which means that guy is not an eligible receiver, and you're telling them that ahead of time. So they knew right ahead that, like, okay, we have to guard 3 guys. Well, if you have 6 defenders, everybody's double-teamed. Michigan can at least cover and double-team. So, like, they can double up Melton, and then, like, you know, maybe Shamin Jones gets a couple downfield because, you know, everybody can get it. Maybe Shamin Jones can, too. But, like, that's...
Well, Shamin Jones is not going to outrun Michigan's defensive backs. So
right.
I was shocked because I looked up that guy's bio, and he's a senior on the Rutgers football team, and he did not transfer from somewhere. I was like, oh, wow, he's just been there. That's amazing.
He has. And he passed Isaiah Washington, who was like supposed to be their like savior. Like, Isaiah Washington, finally, we have a strapping young 6'3", 200-pound lad who's going to go down and get the ball. And Washington, he gets out there, and I think he just gets jammed on the first play, gets knocked over on his jam, and then he's out, and Shamin Jones is back in again. So that's that. Their receiving core is still like way worse than anyone else we played.
Is that a promise?
Well, I'm not saying they can't beat us. I'm just saying if we can beat anybody.
All right. Yeah, that's fair enough. And then they have Isaiah Pacheco back.
Yeah, he's legit.
Hawkins, good player. You like him more than I think is reasonable.
Pacheco? Well,
yeah.
Yes, well, first of all, he hurdles fools. And I love running backs who, like, hurdle guys all the time. Like, he's looking for it, right? He's getting downfield, and he's like, okay, who can I hurdle now? And that's just a great running back play. Well, the second thing is he cuts really sharply. So, like, he'll be running sideline to sideline because you have to. You're playing for Rutgers. You have no choice but to, you know, bounce around guys because you're getting your tight ends are 3 yards in the backfield. And then he cuts, and all of a sudden he's going downfield. And not a lot of guys can turn that well. So that does make him a little bit more dangerous. He's also pretty good out of the backfield, and that's, you know, what all Rutgers has.
Yeah. So, I mean, normally this would be a Rutgers team that scores 10 points, but against this Michigan defense that doesn't really know where it's going, commits a lot of penalties, they could string some drives, especially because in that Wisconsin game, Wisconsin was one deflection and one bad pass from having 2 absolutely massive screens, which kind of bodes unwell.
Yeah, I really hope our cornerbacks have learned how to replace now, because that was a big problem against Wisconsin. And that's going to be an important thing against these guys. Like, you know, if Jamon Green gets hurdled, that's one thing. If Jamon Green's nowhere close because he's still playing man 20 yards downfield, that's a problem.
I mean, this is like, Rutgers is essentially a crack replace test. It's an exam to see if you can crack replace. So hopefully they worked on it in practice this week or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Other side of the ball, the Rutgers defense is even more of a transfer central than the offense is.
They literally fielded a team. At one point, over half the players on the field were either Michigan or Ohio State recruits.
One of those guys is, of course, Mike Dwumfor. They're starting 3 tech, who had an alarming number in your charting.
Well, plus 24, minus 8.5. He is still very much Michael
Dwumfor.
That's
still pretty good.
but he's, you know, that's Henry level. He's going to jump into the backfield really quickly. And once he's back there, he doesn't really care. You know, he's not going to be in his lane. He's not going to stop going forward. So, like, a zone team could, you know, leave him back there. It's just, I don't know if Michigan knows what to do on those.
You could trap him.
Yeah.
But Michigan hasn't been able to trap anybody, so.
It could be the week. I mean, I have him lined up against Zach Zinter, which is it just looks miserable with our true freshman offensive lineman versus our own defensive tackle with a star. But, like, their whole defense is I don't want to get into the stunt 4-3 on this podcast. It's a little difficult to do that in audio, but their whole defense is predicated on jamming up the middle, having Dwumpor fly up the field, and then the linebackers make their guys right. So the ends can get, you know, completely destroyed, and then the linebackers will fling outside because the middle is such a mess.
You mentioned that their particular approach there is vulnerable to people who anticipated it and can block up responses.
Yes. I mean, if Michigan last year was playing this team, it would get ugly because, like, their down G stuff would work great, and their trap game would work great.
And you seem to like their defensive backs a little bit more than I think the statistics would indicate, because they gave up, like, 7.4 yards an attempt to Michigan State, which is a dumpster fire. Indiana, I think, hit 9-something, and Ohio State was at 11, and then the Illinois game was against essentially Denard Robinson, so kind of get it incomplete for that one. But you like their secondary a little bit.
I mean, I don't know if you saw, like, the scores that I gave them in coverage, but I'm not giving anybody science right now unless, like, they really, really, really deserve it. Because I know Michigan has a tendency to turn those guys into superheroes, but they're all kind of in that C-minus range, except for Trey Avery can play. He's the the Ohio State transfer, and he runs like an Ohio State transfer would run. And the other guys, Brendan White's another Ohio State transfer, and you can see it, but you remember that guy. He was like the problem on Ohio State's 2018 defense, and he's still kind of the problem. And then Christian Inzian is, okay. You know, they list him at 5'10". He's not 5'10", and he's, you know, he looks kind of funny going against tight ends every once in a while. So, like, though, there's certainly weaknesses there that you could exploit, especially the way that they play, because they're using those linebackers so much that they just abandon. I think I gave Tyshawn Fogg, their middle linebacker, a -8 in coverage. And, like, those are only the ones that I was, like, certain that were on him, right? Like, most of the time I just give, like, a coverage minus, and I don't know. So that's, you know, alarming if you're Rutgers. Again, Michigan's going to have to develop a mid-range game or a downfield game in order to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I have nothing more to add about Rutgers except one thing. These are the real names of their kickers, Guy Fava and Valentino Ambrosio.
I forgot to mention, like, on the chart that Adam
Jersey Corson... Shore cast reunion.
Oh, yeah, well, Guy Fava is...
Guy Fava.
Yeah, or Adam Corsack, I forgot to mention on my chart, is an Aussie punter.
Oh, he's Aussie.
Yeah, yeah. I checked it afterwards, Bummer. And I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do that.
So 10-point spread seems why, about right, I guess.
Why 10-point spread?
No.
No, I...
This is what it is. No. Is it going to be a dog fight?
Dude, I mean, we had... What was our spread against Michigan State? Like... This team is probably equivalent.
They've incorporated that information. They know all about it.
I think that they are expecting Michigan fans to bet high and take advantage of us. I think that's a hey,
no,
have
no
you
Michigan
bet lately?
Fans betting on Michigan right now.
Or the opposite. It's like, hey, you haven't bet recently. Thank you for listening to MGO Radio. I'm Seth Fisher with Brian Cook, who's making weird faces at me that you can't see. Thanks to Ace Anbender and David Nasternak for coming on here. I need to look at my life choices because I chose to write about Rutgers this week.
whooping. Man, no. Bust their ass on three. One, two, three. Bust their ass.
Now I have to clean up the tee.